You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. The show is brought to you in partnership with Progressive Masculinity and headteacherchat.com. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm a leadership coach and trainer. I work to support schools and multi-academy trusts to develop their leaders so that they can lead as well as possible, but also to support them in terms of the well-being of school leaders, because at We Lead Well, we really believe that well-being is at the heart of quality leadership, and that includes physical, mental, and emotional well-being. Because if you're not well in any or all of those areas, you can't lead well. So we really believe that well-being is at the heart of everything that we do in schools and leadership. So in order to support well-being and more effective leadership, we run a variety of coaching courses. We do group coaching courses for female school leaders, one-to-one coaching for senior leaders, head teachers, CEOs. We also provide leadership training through the Resilient Leaders Elements program, which is absolutely fantastic. And I would highly recommend you visit their website, www.resilientleaderselements.com, for a bit more of a closer look at what they do. And we also have created the Women Lead Well Network, which is a supportive network for female school leaders. It's just a space really where you can communicate with other female school leaders. And I suppose one of the main benefits of it is realizing that you're not on your own in the things that you think and the things that you feel. So they're all the things that we do. And we are sponsored by Schools UK, who provide supply cover insurance for schools. If you are thinking about changing your supply cover insurance in September, I would highly recommend you get a quote from them. If you go ahead with your cover, you can get 10% off with the code We Lead Well Podcast. But what they do brilliantly is provide additional support. They provide a well-being package that includes all sorts of additional benefits. You can check that out on their website at schoolsuk.com. But what they provide is access to a GP on the day that you need it. And this is where I think that is just unsurpassed in terms of support that's provided, because I think a lot of school teachers, school leaders sometimes feel like they need to see a GP, but because of the constraints of the job, not being able to get an appointment, they don't go. And that's a real worry for me. So the fact that they provide that, and it's not just for the teachers in school, it's for every single member of staff in a school. So it's well worth looking at. Now, I want to tell you about an event that I attended last night. And it was an event that was organized by an organization called Apogo, who provide supply cover, but also provide a huge amount of free resources for professional development for schools. And it was the Leading Schools and People event, and it was a cheese and wine event. I don't drink anymore, so I just helped myself to lots of really delicious cheese. But it was a great event for networking, and it was great to hear what the speakers had to say about various things to do with education, including resilience. We were joined by the deputy head teacher of Burnage High School, who are an outstanding boys' school in a really challenging area in Manchester. So it's really interesting to hear what she had to say. And then we heard a speaker talk about AI and tech in education. That was really interesting. I've asked all three speakers to come onto the podcast. But do take a look at Pogo's website, because there are lots of free resources on there, and it would be great for you to partner up with them. And there, I don't know what his role is specifically, but he is now responsible for that learning element of what Pogo do. And it's Phil Denton. I interviewed him on the podcast a couple of months ago. It was a really interesting interview. But do go and have a look at what they're doing. It was a really great event, and they are there to support schools. It's a social, the learning platform element of it is a social enterprise. And I really love that, yes, they've got a business and they're doing supply cover, but they also recognize that they can contribute positively to education. And I think they're doing that really well. And it was an absolutely brilliant event. I met lots of people I've lined up lots of brilliant podcast guests as well. I met some fantastic people there. So it was great to see people coming together on a Thursday evening as well. It was between 5:30 and 8:30. So it was great to see so many people coming together to talk about education, to think about education, to look at how we can really move forward. And it made me think a lot about moving forward in the north of the country and how far we've still got to go to actually be on a par with what's happening in the south of the country in terms of education and the outcomes that we're achieving for children down there in the south. We're still not matching that in the north. So I'd really like to set up a network in the north of education professionals who can really make a difference and hopefully do something about closing that gap between the north and south. If you would be interested in joining that group, please do email me. It's vicky@weleadwell.co.uk, because I'd really like to get some really great thinking going on this and start thinking about what we can do to, as I say, close those educational gaps, because we're lagging behind in the north. And, you know, we were really modern, vibrant place, Manchester, Leeds, you know, there are some fantastic places up here that are doing wonderful things. And we really need to make sure that the education we're providing for our children is on a par with that. So please do get in touch with me if you're interested in joining a network in the north that can look at how we can improve educational outcomes for our children up here in the north. Because as the saying goes, it's grim up north. It's not grim up north. It's brilliant up here. And there are some fantastic things happening. We need to see that reflected in our education system. And if anyone could put me in touch with Andy Burnham, because I know he would be really interested in this, please do get in touch with me, because I'm sure that he would be fully supportive of anything that we could do to improve outcomes for young people in the north. On the show today, I'm joined by the fantastic Yasmin Arif. And our stories are actually very similar. Yasmin worked in schools. She was an English teacher. She's worked in senior leadership in schools. And eventually she felt like she needed to leave school. And she started to work eventually with her brother. And they now provide apprenticeship qualifications in coaching. And they've paired up with Women Ed to provide a particular cohort of female school leaders with the apprenticeship training. What they're doing is absolutely brilliant. I really love it, that on the job training aspect of it. So you know, you're so regularly practicing the coaching approach to leadership and professional development. So I am sure that you're going to really enjoy what Yasmin has to tell us about how a coaching approach can work in schools and how you can do the apprenticeship if you are a school leader and you are really interested in developing your coaching approach and you would like to be a qualified coach. So here she is, Yasmin Arif. Enjoy the interview. Yasmin Arif, welcome to the We Lead Well podcast. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's amazing to have you here. I'm really looking forward to the conversation. So I always start the podcast with an introduction from you. So can you introduce yourself to the listener? Tell them a little bit about who you are, your career, what you've done and what you're doing now.
Yes. I feel like I'm going to bore you, Vicky, because we've just been talking about
I know.
I'm giving you all of this information. But just for the listener's sake, I basically have been a teacher for the past 17 years in secondary education. English was my subject and my passion and my love. And I worked my way up to various leadership roles until about 2 years ago, when I decided to leave teaching. Although there was so many things about the profession that I loved, I did find that, as I've been discussing with you, I was burnt out and it was just getting too overwhelming for me. So I felt like if I just take some time out, I'll find, hopefully, a path that is more suitable to me. And I have. I trained to be a coach, and then coincidentally, my brother at the time needed someone to help him with his business, which is a training provider in apprenticeships. And through that work, I set up the Level 5 Coaching Professional Apprenticeship, which is now in its second year. And we are partnering with educators and charities like Women Ed. And we've also got a hospitality cohort coming up this June, training up leaders as coaches in the workplace. So that's my main job. I do one-to-one coaching on the side where I coach women leaders or aspiring women leaders around career pathways or leadership. So that's just sort of my part-time job, but my full-time job is the level 5 coaching apprenticeship. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, that was great. You managed to do that really succinctly. Sometimes half the interview is spent with me talking to someone about their career, I suppose. So what is it you think can be gained from leaders by doing the coaching apprenticeship? Because it's a big commitment, that, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
I mean, I've been an apprenticeship tutor for the leadership apprenticeship with NPQSL, and it's a significant amount of work, isn't it? It's not something that you can just take on and think, oh, I'll do that and it'll be easy.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. It's at least 12-month commitment with a 14 months if you include the endpoint assessment. And although it's funded through the levy, so the government pay for it, it's still time and energy that organizations have to give and release their leaders for training once a month. So you're right, it is a big commitment, but I do think it's sort of leadership training that our sectors, in particular education, need. Because what I'm seeing on the apprenticeship is leaders come in with the default setting of advising, mentoring, fixing problems. And this is a common theme, I would say, every single leader. And they admit it. And we call it at the beginning the advice monster. Because the question is like, how do I do it? How do I lead without that? And it's really very difficult. So we teach them how to coach, and the principles of coaching are being non-directive, non-judgmental, holding space and using things like silence and creating quality thinking environments. So once we train them up in that, it becomes quite practical, and we literally, as assessors, watch them have conversations with their team members, coaching style conversations, and give them feedback, which might look like something like, take out these words and replace them with these words, or take out these words completely and just hold silence when they said this, or that question was a question, but it was a leading question.
You may as well not have asked it, because you may as well just have said, maybe you should consult your governors on this, rather than saying, have you thought about asking the governors? You may as well, like, really.
It's an opinion dressed up as a question, isn't it? And when you pick these things apart at a granular level with leaders, it really creates insight and self-awareness as to the habits they've got into that they need to now unpick. And you can see them really struggle unpicking it. But 3, 4, 5 months into the course, you can see, you know, it's like the journey of the caterpillar to the butterfly. You can see them blossom and grow, and they become more still and grounded and quiet, and you can see the impact it's having on the coaches, and it's quite profound. And a lot of them have said this has been the best professional development that I've ever had, and I would agree, because if I think back to my leadership journey, I had nothing like that, and I would have loved to have had a coach, but I also would have loved to have been able to coach my team this way. I think those are some of the highlights of this type of training.
Yeah, it's interesting, because what you're saying really resonates with me, because obviously I do coach training for schools and for senior leaders. I'm working with a school in Southport, and I've done coach training and difficult conversations training. One of the members of staff said, I don't usually like CPD, because you just have to sit there and listen to someone talking at you. But like she said, this has been the best CPD she's ever had, just by virtue of the fact that it teaches you a different way to do something. And I think one of the things that you identified there that is a real struggle for teachers and school leaders is that they've always been mentors. And they can't get out of the mindset initially of being a mentor, can they?
No, it's the nature of, if we're talking about the school, that is the nature of schools as well, isn't it? Like, you deliver in a classroom and instruct, and, you know, to a large extent, the students need that structure and that order and that mentoring approach. So it's what we've been trained in. And then you get promoted to a head of department or a senior leader because you're good at that in the classroom. But that approach isn't necessarily the effective approach for leading your adult team members, is it?
No, I don't think it is. And what I bet you will have read Time to Think by Nancy Klein. Most coaches have.
It's on the curriculum, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I think I try to encourage when I'm working with school leaders, I try to encourage them to think about how they can create a thinking environment in their school. And like you're saying, that, you know, there's a lot of direct instruction or didactic teaching at the moment with children. And whilst I'm not saying there isn't a place for that, sometimes you do need to teach them particular things. But one of the best ways to engage children is to get them thinking about things and asking them questions. You know, what if this character wasn't in the book?
Yeah.
How would that impact on the story, the theme, the message, or whatever? And I think we need to start really thinking in schools about how we can get staff thinking about education and teaching and professional development and thinking about it for themselves so that they are engaged in the process of teaching, thinking about the curriculum, not just having everything imposed on them. Oh, we're going to do this, we're going to focus on retrieval practice, or this is a new curriculum that we're doing, you know, here, do White Rose maths, it works. You know, I just don't think that teachers engage in their work as much when everything's being given to them. So do you, I mean, I'm assuming because it's a book on the course, do you encourage that type of approach with your trainees, coaches,
yes,
apprentices?
No, yeah. So they use Nancy Klein's 10 components of a thinking environment to do an audit. So they can do it on a small level and just do it themselves and audit the thinking environment, or they can take it wide and get other stakeholders to complete the audit to see actually what are people saying about these factors, to what extent do they feel they exist. So yeah, we explicitly encourage it using that framework. But as we've discussed earlier, Vicky, schools aren't naturally inclined to that way of being. They're busy, busy places, and every teacher has a list as long as the arm that is continuous and never ending. So it's a challenge for them. They come away into this coaching training space, which is nice and calm, and they can practice coaching, and then you say, right, go back and practice it in the school. And they're given all sorts of challenges, and there's barriers, even physicality, trying just to find a room where a student's not knocking on the door, or you're not interrupted by another member of staff and is completely quiet, is a challenge in itself. So the answer is yes, we do actively encourage it, but there are challenges and barriers. One of the, I think, real elements of hope, though, is quite a large majority of our educating coaching cohort are head teachers. So if you've got the head teachers coming in and pennies dropping with them, I feel like to a certain extent, there's more opportunity for impact because they can cascade this down from the top and they've got a bit more power and authority to do that.
And that's really important, isn't it? Because that's why I coach senior leadership teams first and do the coach training with them. Sometimes a head will say, oh, we want to do coaching, so can you do coach training for the staff? And I will always say, no, it has to start with coach training for the senior leadership team, because they have to understand the philosophy, the approach, mm-hmm. how it's going to work. They have to experience it and engage in it, feel the power of it. That sounds really like feel the power of it. But they do, they have to understand the benefits of it for themselves before they can start to apply what they've learned or engage staff in it. And I always say, when you offer it to staff as well, it has to be a choice. That you can't force a coaching approach onto staff. You can't force them to do coach training, because the point is it's supposed to be self-directed. So it has to be offered as a choice. You can mm-hmm. choose to do it. But I think, and it requires a significant investment, doesn't it, in terms of time, which always means money in some way.
It does, even though like it's funded, you still need to pay for the cover for those teachers to be taken out and attend training. But one of the great things I think about the coaching professional apprenticeship compared to maybe some of other apprenticeship programs where I've seen this happen, and this doesn't really happen in school settings, because I feel like teachers in general are just incredibly conscientious people, and when they do professional development, they're really committed. But in some contexts or sectors, an apprenticeship's forced upon you. So you will do this apprenticeship. It's part of your job role, whether you like it or not. Large majority, in fact, I'd say for the teachers, I can't think of one teacher who has been referred to do this. Every teacher, I think I'd have to double check, has self-referred. So have come to us and said, I want to do this. I'll go back to my employer, my school, and ask them, which is fantastic, because they're so self-driven. They want to do this. They're committed to it. And I think that's why it's working with the educators, because A, they're incredibly conscientious and they're great learners, teachers, but B, they're all self-referring. But they want this. They're hungry for it.
And do you know what impact it's had on the schools where the apprentices work?
Yes. So we've had our first achievers now, and they've all got a distinction so far. So we're incredibly proud. And one of those was a teacher, a senior leader in a school. And I think this is a recurring theme, and it coincides with the research. So some of the research that I've come across says that organizations with coaching cultures are more likely to attract and keep high performing staff. Retention is better where organizations have coaching cultures. And when I can see our leaders from schools coaching middle leaders or just teachers, one of the recurring themes is I finally feel listened to. That's what the coaches are saying. I actually wanted to leave teaching, but now I feel like I've got the support and the mechanisms to stay. So I think in terms of staff retention, we're seeing impacts. And obviously, these are all anecdotal at the moment. I feel like over time, we'll be able to get some more robust research. And I think the other impact that I'm seeing is autonomy. So leaders and teachers who are being coached, struggling and find it quite difficult at first. And that's why contracting is so important, not to be advised, sometimes even maybe a bit disappointed in the first session because they've not been given any advice. But then once they've got used to the process, they figure it out for themselves because they have to. And then they go away and implement it and succeed. It's empowering, and they become more autonomous in their role, which is essentially what we want all our teams to be.
And that's a major element of well-being in schools, because I think there's a bit of a vicious cycle in that. One of the things when I do coach training, I talk about learned helplessness, and there's so much of that in schools because we're in a high stakes accountability, or we're in an environment of high stakes accountability. Schools feel like they have to get results, therefore they have to tell staff what to do. So we're going to do this. I'm going to try that. We're going to put this in place. And then staff don't necessarily enjoy that or like it and complain. Why are we always being told what to do? Why can't we? But then schools will go, all right, then we'll, you know, have some freedom, have some, you decide. And then the staff go, Yeah, but tell it. We need to know, how often do we do this? Do we, and how should it look? And then the leaders go, okay, well, we'll give you all that information and then we'll tell you what to do. And then you're in that vicious cycle of, tell us what to do. Don't tell us what to do.
Yeah.
We don't like being told what to do, but we need you to tell us what to do, because we've never worked in an environment where we've had this sort of autonomy. And I think using coaching can support you to go from that environment of learned helplessness and staff feeling like they don't want to be told what to do. But when they're not told what to do, they can't cope with it. So they look back.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And I think what helps them on the coaching apprenticeship manage this is, we've got to remember that these are organizational internal coaches that we're training. They're not, I guess, a bit like me and you, Vicky. We've got our own private maybe practice where we coach one-to-one outside of an organizational setting as private coaches. So we're not internal stakeholders. But you are an internal stakeholder and an internal coach. So we do a lot around training our coaches to contract, or call it an agreement, whatever you prefer, at the beginning, not just with the coachee, but with the senior stakeholders. So find out what your organizational goals are, so that senior stakeholders feel reassured and trusted that this is going to feed into their school improvement plan or into their organizational goals. And the coachee can come up with something that's aligned to them. But it's a loose framework, because we're not going to dictate to the coachee what they want to choose to be coached on. But there needs to be a sort of a tripartite agreement, because it is an organizational setting. So that's how we get them to manage it. And it's a bit of a back and forth, because we're like, we need to give the coach the autonomy. We can't tell them what to do. In the same breath, we do need to make sure that we are aligning with the school goals. But, you know, it depends on the organization. But if someone wants to have a coaching conversation around stress and not being able to get enough sleep, that in some shape or form is going to feed into the organizational goals, isn't it? Because if they're healthy and happy and getting enough sleep, they're going to be able to perform better as a teacher or a leader. So I think that's how we manage it through that framework.
And one of the things, might have been before we started recording actually, that I mentioned, I do training in difficult conversations, because it comes up so often in the one-to-ones that I do with school leaders, having to engage in difficult conversations or struggling to hold people to account or manage conflict. And the perimenopausal brain fog, it happens every time I'm doing a podcast, it steals my thought away. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what was it I was going to say to do with that now? But I think what I was going to say is, that coaching can help you to engage better in holding others to account. I was reading something about Finland, and it was like the Finnish education minister or someone like that had said something like, responsibility is what you get when you take accountability away, or something like that. And I thought that's really interesting, because if you use a coaching approach, people start to be more responsible, don't they, for their own outcomes, for their own performance, rather than having to have someone breathing down their neck, holding them accountable and saying, you know, you're accountable for the results of these children, so what are you going to do, or what have you done, and blah, blah, blah. When you use a coaching approach, people take responsibility for themselves, don't they? Before we hear more from Yasmin about how a coaching approach encourages people to take responsibility for themselves, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat. Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of different information for schools to tap into. Head Teacher Chat is more than just a platform. It's a community, a support system, and a trusted companion in the ever-evolving journey of educational leadership. Whether you're looking for resources, community support, or expert insights, Head Teacher Chat is there for you every step of the way. To find the support you need or to join the conversation, head over to Head Teacher Chat's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn pages, or visit their website at headteacherchat.com. Head Teacher Chat, it's what head teachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
Yes, I think they do, which is perhaps needed more so in schools, because I think from experience, there is this like infantilization of teachers, isn't there? Treating, we've got a certain approach with students, teenagers, children, and we tend to default to that for our adults as well, which takes responsibility away from them. Whereas when you use a coaching approach, you're right, I do think it increases their responsibility, and you don't need those tight accountability systems as much. Yeah, it's a slow burner though, I think, because even the leaders on the course who are open to this approach are still trying to figure out how to implement it in a system that's, you know, so embedded the way it is in direction, instruction, high stake accountability.
I will say, if I go in to work with a school, it will take 2 to 3 years, maybe even longer, to embed that coaching approach in your school. It's not a quick fix. You have to slow down to speed up, don't you?
That's a good phrase. Definitely. I like that.
Because everything in schools is so fast. Like, we want this, we want that, we want the other. So what happens is, like, something will be introduced, there'll be an inset day, everyone's trained in it, and then everyone's just expected to do it. And it doesn't happen. And then it's like, oh, why didn't that happen? Let's do something else. Let's try something else. Let's throw this at everybody, and nobody does it, because behavior change is really difficult. And I always say, if you can get staff eventually coaching each other and supporting each other in that way, talking about what they're doing, the changes that they're making, the tweaks that they need to make to it, how well it went, which bits of it worked, which bits of it didn't, what changes they need to make, what they're going to do in the next lesson, and then engage in that continual process of professional discussion through coaching, you can make significant improvements.
Yes, sure, I agree.
I think that as well, I don't know what you think about this, there are a lot of misconceptions about what coaching is in schools. The word coaching is thrown around like, oh, we'll do some coaching, but nobody really knows what it is. It feels like a buzzword, and they say, oh, we'll do some coaching, but it's not coaching, it's like mentoring or instructing.
Yeah, we were talking about this before, weren't we? Finding a common language as a sector is really important. And obviously, instructional coaching has been the buzzword now for some time. As we've discussed, some argue it's the best bit term to describe a process that supports teachers in improving their performance. But when you look at the approach, it is instructing/training/mentoring, all those three words, I think, fit it better than coaching, because, as you know, coaching in its purest form is non-directive.
Yeah.
Coaching, as defined by the main professional bodies like the ICF or the EMCC, do describe coaching as a collaborative partnership that's non-directive. So you're right. There is great misconception around what coaching is, and I think that's because of the instructional coaching movement. But what's great to see is teachers coming on the apprenticeship and saying, yeah, we've got instructional coaching in our school, and after 1 month on the apprenticeship, I realized it's not coaching, and I now know perhaps more where that approach is more suited to, because now I've got these other tools, I know how to coach properly, and I can use that perhaps with my more experienced teachers. So even more reason, I think, to get more leaders on the coaching apprenticeship so that we can create this common language where everyone's singing from the same hymn sheet.
And you've talked about that, you mentioned the apprenticeship levy, and I'm pretty sure that most of the listeners won't know what that is. Yeah. And I think a lot of people think it's for, like you were talking about, your brother doing like the warehouse operative or engineering apprenticeships and things like that. So can you just tell us a bit about the apprenticeship levy and how that works? Because you talked about it being fully funded, and, you know, CPD budgets are tight. So anything that's free,
yes,
I suppose.
Definitely. Yeah, no, it is. It's almost unspoken about and unheard of on the front line. I think the more senior you are, perhaps the more aware of the levy pot you are. But essentially, and also I think before I talk about how the funding works, the term apprenticeship, I think, has got a little bit of stigma attached to it, hasn't it?
It's a bit misleading, isn't it?
Yeah, and maybe some people think a degree or an MPQ has more respect and worth than a credibility than an apprenticeship. But I can tell you now, the level 5 apprenticeship is pre-degree level, and it's really rigorous. I would say perhaps to some extent more so than the MPQ that I did.
Yeah.
So I think that is misleading, the term apprenticeship. But I think essentially what you need to understand about the apprenticeship is it is elements of academic study, but it is practical on the job application of what you're learning regularly,
right,
and formative assessments consistently throughout the year. So it's not like a degree that can be fully theory based when you know, like my English degree, I didn't do any really practical application. My PGC was the first time I really understood what practical application of learning was. So the apprenticeship is practical. In terms of funding, so the way the apprenticeship funding works is every employer in England, no matter whether you're in education or hospitality or what sector, if your payroll is over 3 million, you have to pay into the apprenticeship levy. And it's almost like a tax. You have to pay it. There's no opt out. If that money is not used, and it can only be used for apprenticeships to upskill your workforce, then it goes back to the government. So if you don't use it, you lose it. And if you don't have a payroll over 3 million, you can still access the levy,
right,
by just paying a small fee. So the government will still subsidize you. So for example, if it was a £5,000 apprenticeship as an employer, if you didn't pay into the levy because you had a payroll of 3 million or below, you'd pay it something like £250. I can't think, is that like 20% or less?
Right. Okay.
You pay a small fee, or you can do, you can exchange. So if you know another organization who have got money in their levy pot left over, they can gift that to you as an organization.
Okay.
So there are lots of ways to access it if you know how. And there's probably a lot of organizations, in particular schools, who are sitting on a levy pot that's unused and that will go back to the government if they don't use it.
Thank you very much for that. That very well explained. So essentially, it is free training. There is some commitment from the school, isn't there, to, like you said, to allow apprentices to go to training days or to do off the job study, because there is a 20% requirement for off the job hours.
That's right. Yeah. So
I imagine, I think that's like the most people will relate to that as in day release. You know, if a 17-year-old's doing a level 3 apprenticeship, they'll probably do 4 days in work and then have a day release, and that would be their 20% off the job time. But how does it work when someone works full time?
That's a good question. So the way it works with us is once a month, there's a training session where there will need to be a release. But three of those, so there's 8 masterclasses across the year. 3 of those are full day. So you will need a day, 3 day releases across the year. The other 5 are 2.5 hour sessions that we often schedule if it's school leaders after the school day, 3:30 till 5:30 or 6:00. to support schools with cover. In terms of your weekly off the job, so that is essentially where you have to practice coaching knowledge, skills and behaviours in the workplace, and you need to be doing that 8 hours per week. You can actually do that in your day-to-day role. So, you know, if we're teaching you a segment on emotional intelligence and you've got two line management meetings that you're leading that week, you can, even though you might not be pure coaching, you can still practice those techniques in your line management meetings. Or even if you're a classroom teacher, you could practice your questioning techniques, because questioning is such a fundamental part of coaching and teaching. You can apply that in your classroom teaching. Right. So it's application of what you've learned in your day-to-day role. And we look at each apprentice and what their average week looks like and where there are opportunities to practice coaching, and then they have to create a log around where they've practiced it.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Now, you mentioned NPQs, and I do the leadership performance coach role for NPQs, and I do like this new version of the NPQs. I think that we need a lot more variety in what's out there and being offered to school leaders, because unfortunately, I think because the NPQs are fully funded, there's a tendency for schools to just solely put school leaders, middle leaders, aspiring middle leaders onto the NPQs. And I don't think the NPQ offers a completely holistic approach to leadership. Mm. And I think one of the things that is missing from the NPQs is how to build relationships with staff, that how to hold staff to account, have difficult conversations, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that, like, this probably offers a viable alternative, or even something that sits really nicely alongside the NPQs. What's your take on that? Because I just think there's not enough of an offer out at the minute. I think what this offers, apprenticeship in coaching, is definitely something a bit different, isn't it?
Mm. So is the NPQ embedded into the apprenticeship that you deliver?
Well, there is an apprenticeship as well. So I do the leadership performance coach role for NPQH.
Yeah.
And I just solely do that. I was doing, because obviously when you leave your job, you need something a bit more stable that's going to bring you an income. So I did do the apprenticeship tutor role, that is the leadership apprenticeship with NPQSL. So the NPQSL was the off the job hours, essentially. That was, you know, like the training that ran alongside the practical application in the day-to-day job. And they still do the apprenticeship with NPQSL and with NPQH. They're sort of melded together. So you do the apprenticeship, the leadership apprenticeship. Oh, it's leadership. I think it is called the leadership apprenticeship now, but you do it alongside NPQSL.
Mm. So
it's quite a big ask.
Yes.
It's a lot. It's a lot to do.
So I think this basically links to how I'm going to answer this question, which is the offers at the moment, and even I'm talking about the apprenticeship that we deliver, they're big asks, aren't they? They're almost like another degree or another teaching qualification equivalent.
I think the thing that people find quite time-consuming is the evidence. You've got to produce the evidence, haven't you? You've got to have the documentation there that you've done that there has to be evidence of your knowledge, skills and behaviours that you've developed. That's the time-consuming part of it, isn't it?
So, and I think because the apprenticeship and the NPQs are funded, that's why schools are tapping into them more.
Yeah.
So then, more so than they should, because actually I think what the sector needs is a more light touch approach in terms of assessment. I'm not saying light touch in terms of quality of training and the curriculum and the content, but we're trying to design something like this where it is just purely masterclass training on the coaching skill, a little bit like what I did for my qualification, and a clean and succinct and efficient assessment at the end where they submit X amount of hours coaching with a log, and they submit a recording of them coaching, and you listen and assess that. And it's much less onerous than what they have to do at the moment. And it's more, I would say, it's kinder to the teacher because that they're all already stressed. They've already got a lot of bureaucracy and paperwork to deal with. So they're still getting the skills I feel like they need, but they're just not bogged down with all the red tape. But it would be a non-funded option. So then the question is, are schools willing to dip in if they've got it to their CPD budget to pay for that kind of training?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a cost implication with both because you do have to free back up two things. So on the MPQ, you have to go to the face-to-face days, and there are four of those.
Right.
So you can have to pay for supply cover for those 4 days. And then when you do the assessment, the summative assessment at the end, you're probably going to have to allow a day for the gathering of data and preparing for that. And it's a bit the same with the apprenticeship. But I think a lot of schools don't know that the apprenticeship is there as an option, do they? And
right.
I think, well, funding is probably going to be taken away from the MPQs imminently.
Right.
I don't know how long it's going to be fully funded for. So the apprenticeship is a route into accessing high quality training and not having to pay a high cost for it.
Yes, definitely. Yes. And that will, I don't think it's going anywhere either. The apprenticeship funding, I think it's highly likely to stay, if not expand and become more adaptable. So yeah. And you're right. I don't think as many schools are aware of it as there should be.
Yeah. And I think that I'm not saying that there isn't value in doing the apprenticeship with MPQSL or with MPQH, but if I were going to do it, I would probably do an apprenticeship in coaching and an MPQSL, HLTD, whatever it is, because I think that it creates that holistic balance. A lot of the work that I do in the coaching role for MPQH is bringing the holistic element to it and thinking about how you apply what you're learning, which is quite pragmatic and theory based. Like, how do you apply that then with people?
Yeah.
Because it's all right having all that knowledge and understanding curriculum and understanding how CPD works and understanding how you lead on teaching, behavior systems, SEN, all of those things that you might learn. But there's an interface there, isn't it? It's the people in your organization, who you're working with, like you have to be able to work with them to apply all that learning effectively. And a coaching approach, in my opinion, is the best way to bring people on board, to engage people and retain people and make it, you know, much easier to apply all that learning.
Definitely. Yeah, 100% agree with you. Because like I said before, like it involves observations of, and you probably do this in your training, people, leaders having conversations. And and when does that ever happen? When
it doesn't, does it?
No one ever watched me have a leadership conversation and gave me feedback on it.
No. And then like when you say it, like I know that's the case, but it just made me go, how true? Like how often, like we just have to learn that ourselves, don't we? We just have to figure it out. If we're getting it wrong, who knows? you're just actually in the dark, really, aren't you? You're just trying to figure things out for yourself. And actually to have those conversations observed and then have a discussion about how it went and things that you can do to actually improve the types of conversations that you have, that's really, really powerful, isn't it? Just to finish off, you work with Women Ed. So I'm assuming that most of your apprentices are women. Is that right?
Yes and no. in our women, we've got a Women Ed cohort. So
yeah.
specifically designed for women leaders in education or aspiring women leaders in education. And Women Ed actually have some input into the curriculum, and there are Women Ed sessions that we link to the content.
Right.
Like, that is a very bespoke cohort of coaches, but we do have mixed cohorts, and on those cohorts, for example, cohort 6, we've got educators, men and women, and we've also got people from different sectors. So there's this cross-pollination.
Right, brilliant.
It's different sectors working together. So you might have a HR advisor or training development manager from hospitality, recruitment, or an IT working with teachers, which I think is really a great opportunity.
Yes.
So in answer to your question, yes, we do have male teachers on the course, and we do have male apprentices from other sectors as well. The large majority are women, though.
Right.
That's where Hannah Wilson has done a great piece of work recently on creating a directory of coaches in education who are from diverse backgrounds and aren't just, as I think a lot of them are, women, because women tend to gravitate to coaching more. So in answer to your question, yes, there are men on the course as well.
But that's brilliant. And I think that offers, like, if you were choosing MPQs, or if you had to choose one, that would be the thing that sold this for me, being able to work with people from other sectors. Because it does become quite, not that I'm saying that you don't learn a lot from other people, and if you work in a secondary school, you can learn a lot from people when you go to face-to-face days, who work in special schools, primary schools, different contexts, independent schools and things like that. But it's still very education-based, and I think it would be really interesting and add another dimension to the training to hear about how it works in other sectors and organisations. I imagine that's quite powerful for the school leaders and teachers who are on the course.
Yes, and some of them have specifically, the women leaders have specifically asked to go in a mixed cohort for those reasons that you've just described, Vicky, because they want to learn from other sectors, which you very rarely get an opportunity to do so.
And do your apprentices observe each other? Do you do anything like that?
Right. Our observe practice is made up of a group of up to 4 apprentices, a small group, and they only get 15 minutes, but they have to coach each other. So we do a lot of contracting around confidentiality, and everyone is always very trusting and great at that. And then they just have to coach each other. So you get a real privilege, actually, a window into other people's lives and their problems. And you also get to see other coaches have a go at it and struggle and make mistakes, which makes you feel slightly reassured that, oh, it isn't just me that's always trying to lead and fit.
Yeah. I really wish this apprenticeship had been available when I was a school leader. Yeah. I would have absolutely loved it. It would have brought so much to my leadership. I think I'm not, just so the listeners are aware, I'm not being paid for this. There's no affiliate marketing going on or anything like that. I just really love it. I think it's a brilliant approach. I know lots of people do the level 5 ILM coaching course, don't they? And I think that I did the ICF. I did my ICF, and I'm just about to go for my PCC through the ICF. And I chose ICF because of the practical, because it was a much more practical course, and I felt like I would be applying my learning more often and practicing my coaching and engaging in that much more reflective practice, rather than, I think the ILM courses are a little bit theory based. And whilst I'm not saying there shouldn't be theory, of course there should, there's a lot of essay writing for it. I think you have to do 60,000 for the level 7. I think you have to do 60,000 words or something like that. And I think for me, I don't think that would suit me writing essays. I much prefer doing the reading, reading the research, doing that learning and then applying it. And I think this is what the apprenticeship offers. It really is that, like, that
practical
approach, isn't it?
Yes, and also the ILF isn't funded. It's expensive.
No, it is expensive, isn't it? Yeah. Is it over £3,000, I think, to do the ILM, isn't it?
Is it? But, yeah.
I think so.
The level 7 is probably even more.
Yeah. So that's a big bonus with this. So what I'm saying is, anybody who can do it, what's your company called? Just let us know again. And how can people like find out more? What's your website?
Yes, sure. So CVP Group, so www.cvpgroup.co.uk. That's our website. I have got a Twitter page and so does CVP Group. So we're pinned on our Twitter pages, and I'm referring to Twitter because I know that's where a lot of our educators hang out. Mm-hmm. We've pinned the register of interest form on our Twitter pages. So at CVP Group, and then there's an underscore at the end of CVP Group. That's our Twitter page. And essentially, if you just click on the form in our bio, you can register your interest and we'll be in touch as quick as we can to see if you qualify and have a screening call. I think that's probably the best way, either the website or the Twitter page.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us. I just think what you're doing is absolutely brilliant. And if every single school in the country could have an apprentice doing the coaching apprenticeship, it would be amazing. Maybe we could start making a real difference. So
dream, you know, like having one coaching ambassador at least in every school in the country. I do think coaching will change the world, and if we could achieve that, happy days.
Fully trained though, with a full understanding of what pure coaching is.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Yasmin. Have a great day.
Thank you, Vicky.
Great big thanks to Yasmin, because I know she's really, really busy and she's taken the time out to come and chat to us today and tell us all about the apprenticeship and engage in a really great conversation about coaching and how it can improve your leadership and support you to lead others much more effectively. I was talking about Apogo at the start of the show and how they offer lots of free resources, and I think it's really, really helpful that the apprenticeship is virtually free, so there is funding for it. And I think you really need to look into that apprenticeship levy that you're paying anyway, because you may as well get something out of it. And this is something really, really valuable that you could get out of it that could potentially change the culture in your school. So do look into that. That is all we've got time for today. If you would like to join the network in the north, please do email me and let me know that you would like to join in with that conversation. If you want to find out more about coaching, I love it when people email me and ask me about coaching and we can have a conversation. So I would love you to email me. It's vicky@weleadwell.co.uk. Coaching really can transform your school. It can lead to school improvement. It can improve the well-being for your staff. It can lead to greater satisfaction levels and staff able to find more joy in what they do. So please do email me. It's vicky@weleadwell.co.uk, or you can have a look at the website, www.weleadwell.co.uk, and you can get in touch with me via that. Whatever you're doing this week, please make sure you give yourself some time to look after your own well-being, engage in some self-care, whether that's a walk in nature, whether it's sitting down and having 10 minutes just to have a cup of tea, doing some meditation, spending time with your friends, whatever it might be. Find some time for yourself so that you can just do something that you enjoy. And I will see you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with headteacherchats.com and Progressive Masculinity, and was sponsored by Schools UK.